Welcome into Searching for San Antonio, part of the San Antonio Podcast Network. This series explores the Alamo City by showcasing small businesses, nonprofit organizations, and some of the wonderful people that make San Antonio what it is. Join in as we search for the true meaning of being a San Antonian. Hey, what's up, listeners? It's Zachary Espericueta, one of your hosts here on the San Antonio Podcast Network. This week, I'll be sitting down with April and Sierra to talk about an array of topics. As always, you'll hear a little bit about her backstory and how she got into her current role with Ancira Auto Group. And if you're from San Antonio originally or have lived here long enough, you know the Ancira name. You've seen it around town, right? You've seen it on commercials and billboards all over town. On the surface, it may seem like it's just another auto group who owns a few dealerships around the city, but April and her family do a lot for the San Antonio community. Her philanthropy is not only notable, but it's fun for her, and you'll hear about that, how sometimes it's a competition, a friendly competition with her peers to raise money for good causes. If you follow the success of the UTSA football program this season and this year, you also know she's a huge proponent of the team and the university. She's been all over social media the last few months supporting our Roadrunners. If you recall that big fundraiser donation drive that she put on for the students to attend the conference championship game for free, as well as the bowl game, traveling, and all the different expenses that that covered. Lastly, you won't want to miss our conversation about how she handles the Twitter and Facebook haters that are out there. I think we all know that there's some Facebook and social media haters just in general. I loved hearing her perspective on the matter since she, of course, has a much bigger platform on a lot of the social medias. I'm really excited to get to my interview with April, but before I do, I want to remind the listeners that this episode is brought to you by Live from the Southside. Live from the Southside is a Latina-owned online and print publication that helps residents and visitors find things to do on the south side of San Antonio and throughout Texas. Their goal is to improve and expand community relationships through promoting positive stories, interesting people, and businesses in the community. You can visit their website at southsidesanantonio.com, which is also where you can order the Live from the Southside magazine. You can also order your copy of the magazine on Amazon or simply subscribe to their monthly newsletter to receive your online edition. Lastly, you can follow them at Southside SATX on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. As always, huge thank you to April Monterosa and Live from the Southside for supporting this podcast. Listeners, we're going to take a quick break, and in our next segment, we'll be joined by April and Sierra.
This is what we're made of, the businesses that line our streets and the customers that make them flourish. As a business owner, this is your community, your members, your regulars, your neighbors. Your business is unique, so are your customers. No matter who you need to reach, Spectrum Reach is here to help you connect with the right message on every screen. Visit SpectrumReach.com to connect with a local advertising expert. That's SpectrumReach.com.
Welcome back into Searching for San Antonio. Like I mentioned earlier, I'll be interviewing SA's version of a Kardashian. April Ancira, of course. April is the VP of Ancira Auto Group and oversees the operations of franchise auto stores around town. She has San Antonio roots, having attended high school at St. Mary's Hall, received her Bachelor's of Science in Marketing and Finance from Trinity University, and her Master's in Business from UTSA. So, birds up, of course. She has worked in the car business since 1997 in every facet, from being an operator and cashier to selling cars and trucks on the front line. April currently serves on 12 active charitable, civic, and professional boards and has been inducted into the San Antonio Women's Hall of Fame. In 2021, she served as the youngest chairman in the history of the Texas Automotive Dealers Association, which, by the way, is about 1,400 dealers, and has twice served as chairman of the San Antonio Dealers Association. A few fun facts about April. She has a pilot's license, does stand-up comedy, so now I know why she gets along so well with Cleto. She loves to race triathlons called Ironmans, if you're familiar with those. And, by the way, this is her quote, not mine, has failed miserably singing the national anthem at a missions game here in town. April has been married to her husband Jason Thompson for 13 years, whom she met at the National Automotive Dealer Academy. April and Jason have two children, Hope and Gunner, as well as two dogs, Gracie and Lucky. So without further ado, here is my interview with April Ancira. So welcome into Searching for San Antonio, April. I'm so happy to have you. I'm excited to have you on the show. I think a lot of our followers and listeners know who you are. But for some of the people who don't know, maybe they're not from San Antonio, maybe they're new to San Antonio and they're listening to this podcast, kind of give us a backstory, you know, who you are. Where does the name come from, Ancira?
Absolutely. So I'm April Ancira. I'm the vice president of Ancira Auto Group. We have 11 stores in South Texas, soon to be 12. They're all new franchise stores, which means that you'll find new product and used product on them. We do go all the way back to May 1972. My dad is from Mexico City. On his travels about the United States as in charge of marketing for Kimberly Clark, he found out that a store on Market in Flores, it's no longer there, it was moved to Bandera, it was a Chevrolet store, was basically up for grabs. And San Antonio was pushing for a Hispanic person to become the dealer. And so my dad saw an opportunity because the ones in front of him weren't very appealing to him. They required that he go to Brazil. He wasn't into that at the time. So basically there was probably 100 applicants. And I love telling the story. Maybe this isn't why I'm here, but I just adore the story. He was the only one to negotiate a buy-sell agreement with the trust that owned the dealership because the owner had passed away. He got the financing available immediately. He knocked on GM's door every day, got an efficiency by their office at the time in Houston. He got an attorney to put all the contracts together. And in sort of the American dream type scenario of everything falling together last minute, just barely, he went from the bottom of the pile to the top of the pile to become the first Hispanic Chevrolet dealer in the United States back in 1970. Yeah.
Wow. Now, at this point in time, were you already born? Were you in the picture yet? Or was this before you were born?
Sure. are you saying I look like I was around?
No. I had to make sure.
I hope not. I'm going to have to work on this little light I have back behind the podcast. Make bad shadows. No, this is 1972. I was born at the end of 1980.
Okay. Well, it's a great segue into the next question. And that's why I ask, which is, you know, with a lot of family businesses, especially one that grows large as Ancira has, you know, sometimes the child of the original business founder doesn't want to get into the family business. They kind of want to do their own thing, make their own name, right? You know, for yourself, right. Did you ever kind of have that moment where you're like, Dad, I don't want to do this anymore, you know, or I don't want to do this? Or maybe you did, you know, what was that kind of like growing up?
Great question. So when I was 16, I asked my dad for a job simply to buy clothes. Had nothing to do with my auto industry. I wasn't like ahead of the game thinking I needed experience. It was really shallow motivations. I wanted to buy clothes. So I asked him for a job at 16. So 16, 17, 18, those summers, I worked for my dad in accounting, clerical, what have you. I did not like it. I went to Trinity University, great school. Half of it was because I stayed for a boy. We broke up immediately. So you know how that goes. But I feel like things happen for a reason. I took a student managed fund class. I was ready to go work on Wall Street, New York. My dad's cousin was setting up an interview with Smith Barney. That was probably going to happen in October of my senior year. But guess what? 9/11 was my senior year. So we never even got to the interview part. And that's what I had my eyes set on. I was developing the experience. Usually they say when things are not going well, economically, it's the best time to go back to school, especially when I'm still so young, I have the time and ability. So that's when I applied to UTSA for my master's degree. So before I went to UTSA, I asked my dad, listen, I just really want to see the other side of the car business. Show me the sales side. I had actually left my dad's business to work at Chili's one summer because it paid more. I was the only 425 employee at my dad's business. So I made tons more as a waitress at Chili's, which is one of my most favorite jobs that I've ever had. But it didn't have a really good growth trajectory. So that summer before I started grad school, I said, can I sell cars? I'm just curious what that looks like from a business perspective. I sold my first car and that experience went so well for the gentleman. He immediately bought a second car, immediately referred his sister, who brought in a friend for moral support. And while that lady was in sales, I sold her a car. I knew at that moment, wait a second. This is, I think I found my spot, my space. Prior to that, I had only been in the back crunching numbers. There wasn't enough technological support at that time. So you were looking at these numbers and your eyes were going cross-eyed. And so that's when I knew, all right, here we are in the car business. I got my degree, only took 3 semesters because it was also my focus in undergrad. So I didn't have to take a lot of classes. So super fast. Then I went to a dealer academy. I went through service, parts, every single department that I could get my hands on, additional training. And here I am. And so that's kind of the story about why I work for my dad.
So you got your master's degree then from UTSA? Is that what it was?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
That is
so true. So for the UTSA listeners and followers, because I know we have a few since we interviewed the gentleman over at Alamo Dome Audible. So you know now that April isn't just supporting UTSA just because. Like, yeah, she is actually a grad. So for those who don't know.
It's legit. And honestly, I graduated. I even thought about getting my doctorate degree, but my dad told me to get off his personal payroll and get onto the company payroll. But I immediately joined the alumni board. So, I mean, only like a year after I graduated, I was already back involved with UTSA on the alumni board. And frankly, earlier you and I were talking before we started recording, and you said why the fanfare and stuff like that. And yes, that has been San Antonio's recent excitement over UTSA. However, I go way back. They announced that they were going to have football program. I went to then athletic director Lynn Hickey and I said, I don't know who you're picking as coach. And they didn't at the time. And I go, but if you need a demo for this gentleman, sign me up. And actually they came to us. We were the first, and we paid enough that first year to be the exclusive car dealer sponsor. And I'll even tell you, to the tune of $100,000 a year, plus two demos, which is now three demos, plus a F-250.
When you say demo, what is that?
Yeah. So it's sort of like a perk for a coach or an employee.
Oh, okay.
So they actually get to drive our cars for free.
Wow.
Yeah. And not only for free, they get a new one every 6 months.
Wow.
6 months or 6,000 miles.
So yeah. I have to ask then, what is Jeff Traylor drive?
Yeah, no. And Jeff Traylor has the ability to pick from any of our stores. That one's not.
He's got to drive a truck. He's got to drive a truck.
No, he prefers the Chevy Tahoe.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so he could have a Yukon Denali should he want one. He likes the Chevy Tahoe bells and whistles. And every 6 months, that seems to be what he wants. And that's what we trade him out of. So that in fact, is what he drives at this time.
Going back to your passion for UTSA, because I can see it. It's shining through, you know, the way you talk about UTSA. And I love it. I love it. And you could definitely tell through the Twitter interactions you've had over the course of this past football season. But do you think it's grown over time? I mean, I'm even looking at my own UTSA fandom, because same thing, you know, both Erica and I are both graduates of UTSA. She graduated a few years back. I graduated in 2015. But, you know, my passion for UTSA grew. It took time, right? When I went there, and people, the listeners of this podcast know this story, but when I went there, it was supposed to be a stepping stone to go to UT Austin, because that's where my parents went, right? And so that's kind of how I viewed UTSA at the time. But when I went there, literally, when I stepped foot on campus my freshman year, I fell in love with it. And this was in alignment with the growth of San Antonio. Like, when I started going to UTSA, it was 2011. That was the inaugural football season. So you can imagine, as a freshman in college, how exciting this was. I was a freshman at UTSA, my first time being on campus, my first time going to college, right? And the football season starting, it was so fun. I was a part of the 56,000 that were there in that stadium. It was so much fun, right? And over time, you know, there's been lulls, there's been peaks and valleys of the football program. But to have the season that they've had this year, I mean, the passion has just grown. And I've witnessed it, you know, just noticing the fanfare and how much people have bought into the program. I have never seen the city of San Antonio and the businesses of San Antonio buy into the program like I saw them buy in this year. They have in the past. Obviously, there's been sponsors, but never to the extent that I saw this year. So talk about that. Like, did you see that same thing? Like, did you see, like, this year was the year that, man, so many more people bought in?
Yeah. So I think actually timing is everything. What the folks didn't, what San Antonio may not have seen behind the scenes is there actually was already tremendous buy-in. It wasn't publicized. So the tremendous buy-in is the race facility that was ribbon. They broke the ribbon this year, showed it to everybody. That has been years in the making before this fanfare. And those years in the making were millions and millions of dollars raised for these facilities. That means San Antonio's businesses were already invested. You just didn't see the excitement and fanfare through it because it's sort of like it all came together this year like a perfect storm. So it's sort of like you saw the fruits of our labor. And so it was great because now you have additional businesses that are excited about it. But there were some pretty significant and large names that have been working on this for 3, 4, 5 years behind the scenes, where all of a sudden now we have the capability to afford fabulous facilities. You know what? There's facilities that they've announced that are coming out and down the pipeline. They do need to do a little bit more fundraising, but they've almost got it all paid for. And nobody knows that. Nobody knows that because it's these people are just trying to elevate UTSA without the excitement that comes around with these kinds of donations. But it's kind of cool because, like I said, it all culminated this year.
Right.
So you have Trailer, right? He's like your Ted Lasso that everybody's talking about. Incredibly powerful, a tremendous leader. Turns down $47 million, depends who you talk to, $42 or $47 million from tech to stay at UTSA because he absolutely tells these kids, believe in the process and feels like, well, I can't say, see ya. And you have that component. You have a winning team, but you have all the investment from San Antonio and the businesses and the leadership of Amy, Dr. Amy and Lisa. And so now you have this race facility and now you have, we're tier one research.
Absolutely.
Group.
And honestly, that's one of the most overlooked things in terms of like from the casual football fan, right? Because if you're just a casual football fan, maybe you didn't attend UTSA or maybe your cousin's brother attended UTSA and that's why you go, you know, obviously you're paying more attention to the football accolades. But for those that are connected with the university, maybe alumni and pay more attention to that side of things, you know, we've been waiting for this tier one. I've been hearing since tier one, since I was in school, you know, and to finally reach that this year has been awesome. I mean, honestly, I know it might make me a little bit of a nerd, but I mean, that's honestly up there with that conference championship. Like, that's huge for the university.
And it should be. And so, but I think all of these things work together. And so I think, yes, the football, the excitement, the eyeballs on us from that year helped, but it had to do with the investment that's been put into you here. Since I graduated in 2003, every year I came back on campus, there's 1 to 2 new buildings.
Yeah.
I was like, another one, a parking lot. It's insane. And now we have $20 million coming for an engineering. That was a recent gift. We had $40, $45 million that came this past year as well as a generous gift. We have a brand new cybersecurity building. I've been behind the scenes on the state of the art programming downtown that they're going to have for cybersecurity. It is going to be one of the best in the nation. I love football. I think the football and the energy from it is great to put the eyeballs on the rest of this significant and amazing stuff. So that's why I get excited.
Well, one of the things you did for UTSA was you were behind the, the fundraiser, if you will, to raise over $100,000 to help the football team and to help the students, really, for, you know, travel for the bowl game, but also the conference championship, get the free tickets. And that's one of the, you know, many philanthropic endeavors that you've been behind, that you've started, you've been a part of. So kind of talk about some others that you've been proud to. I'm sure there's a ton that you could list and go down the list here, but, you know, some of your favorites that you've been a part of here in San Antonio.
So I have to say this all started in my 20s. I'm 41 now. I did the parade of kettles and they wanted to get, I guess, the local San Antonio celebrities. In my 20s, the fact that I was considered anything of the sort was kind of funny to me. All I did was car commercials. I'd really not done stuff. And what I didn't know is I thought we just painted these kettles for the Salvation Army. And we just went around and collected money. What I didn't realize is that it was a fundraising contest. And I didn't know I had this in me. And there was a young lady, she also UTSA alumni, Delissy Friday. And all of a sudden I noticed her bucket of fundraising was getting kind of close to my bucket of fundraising. And I was like, oh, this is a competition. all right, I'm not losing. And so all of a sudden it became this little philanthropic competition where I was asking for people for money, and I raised about $4,000 and I won. I was so excited that I won. And after that, it was sort of organic. You don't have a lot on your plate in your mid 20s. You know, you're not married with a bunch of kids, all these responsibilities. People started asking me if I could help in their ventures. And I said yes. And I said yes a lot. And what happened was, is I found that I had an extreme joy to be involved in the philanthropic side, civic side, whatever, what have you, to knowing that I'm making a difference when I would be able to give a large amount of money to someone or do something and fulfill their needs. It felt like Christmas morning. Like you were sitting there, you have this little package, this little thing, and you can't wait for them to open it. And you're like, don't worry, I got you. And they're like, yeah. And so fundraising and donating became addictive. And so then I ended up with the Brighton Center, which was early childhood needs. And that one I raised $77,000 to become Queen of the Vine. You go down eventually. I do one every year, but I'll just hit the highlights. LLS, Leukemia Lymphoma Society. And to win that one, it's whoever raises the most for them. And that one I did like 240K. And I thought I was only going to do 50K. So you keep going. I did a Heart Association. That was $350. And on and on and on, as you can see. And so those are some of the highlights. So throughout this, though, I still feel like a peewee. I see Harvey Najum. I don't know if your listeners know who Harvey Najum is, but at least 3/4 of the building in San Antonio.
Right. Everywhere you turn, you'll see his name on a building.
I mean, and God bless that man. He'll tell you right to your face that he can't wait to name the next building, too. So, you know, and he's amazing. So you have that kind of guy, and you have the Valeros and the HEBs, and they're like, here's $1 million, here's $5 million. And you feel kind of like a peewee when you're donating $5,000 and $10,000.
Well, and I know exactly what you mean, just because, I mean, even for us, like, so I started this podcast in March of 2020. It was a COVID project in the beginning. And as we got into the podcast, I wanted to create that philanthropic arm, if you will, of the podcast. And that's how I felt. I felt like, I still feel like a little peewee whenever we raise money, because we're relatively nobodies. I mean, we don't have that name or anything, but we've been able to raise for different causes. So for example, We had our first ever donation drive was last winter, and we partnered up with Haven for Hope, because we interviewed Celeste Eggert over at Haven for Hope, and we were able to put together our own coat drive. We contacted a few other small businesses. They allowed us to put the bins there, and we filled up 6 or 7 bins full of coats. Like, we were so proud of that, being that we're, again, relatively nobody, you know. And then we ended up interviewing Eric Cooper, who I'm sure you know, amazing individual, and he Absolutely. Amazing interview. You know, we're able to interview him. Shortly after, we did a monetary donation drive for the food bank. We're able to raise $500 just by asking friends and family, right? And then we're also fortunate to be able to be an ambassador for the first ever UTSA Giving Day. And we somehow raised $1,000 on our own. And again, like, that's just from asking friends and family and just getting the word out, putting it out on social media. And we're so proud. Like, part of us was like, oh, it's only $1,000. But the other part of us was like, you were able to do that on your own, you know, and just raise that money from $10 here, $20 here, $50 here. And it just amounted to $1,000. And so it was so cool. But I know what you mean when you say, like, we felt like, oh, we're this little like fish, you know, we're this little peewee trying to raise money. But it really doesn't matter. And one thing I've learned by interviewing so many nonprofits, April, is that whenever I ask them about the city of San Antonio, they say what makes San Antonio different, no matter where you go, especially in large cities, you're going to have the big donors, but they feel like in San Antonio, you have so many small donors. You have so many people just giving what they have, just giving $20, just giving $10, $50, and it amounts to something. And it really makes a difference in these nonprofits' lives. And that's what I've kept in the back of my head, because I've heard it straight from these individuals, these program directors of these nonprofits. And so I've been so proud to do that for the city. And I'm sure you are too, you know, every philanthropic endeavor that you've been a part of. I know recently you were, I don't know if it was something you raised or something that your family gave or you gave, but you know, of course you raised money and donated to the San Antonio Parks Foundation. You also made a comment that there's been some haters out there, and that's not the first time for you. That's not the first time for you. And I wanted to ask you about that. Like, what, why do you think that is? Why do you think these haters are out there like just attacking you for that?
I don't know. I think they're bored. It's exciting for them. They want you to come back with a comment so they can fight. It's not like you can actually rationalize the situation with them. They're waiting for you to say anything, even if it's completely positive, super nice. It's rare that that person is like, I'm so sorry, I was out of line. That happens. That happens, but not all the time. I think it's they're feeling involved. They get to be a part of a discussion. Granted, not positive, but it's sort of, there's some sort of entertainment value for it. Also, I think maybe they just didn't have the role models growing up that would have benefited their frame of thought. There's misnomers out there. They do think I have millions and millions to give. And so I'm not giving enough right now. Or they don't understand why me kicking off UTSA's fundraising with $5,000. They were like, that's ridiculous. You should have paid for all of them.
Right. Or even the thing with Cletho, like helping him, you know.
I should have paid for all of his medical bills. But the fact is when you have something, you know, San Antonio will get behind and they in tune donate to that cause, then that frees up additional money that you can give to something else that doesn't have the same sort of exposure.
Right.
So there are people out there that don't have the same name recognition as Cletho. And when they would send me their GoFundMe, that freed up my money. Every GoFundMe that month, I gave $100 to every single one that got sent to me, because I knew these people wouldn't have the same opportunity that he did. But the fact that other people came to help him freed up that fund, those funds for these folks. And that's kind of where my head goes.
Well, I just want to be, and I'm sure him and his family has thanked you enough, but I just want to thank you on, you know, for helping him out. I know Cletho was just in a rough spot. I know you're good friends with Cletho, and it was so sad. You know, listeners of the podcast know that was shortly after I did my interview with him. And I just remember thinking like, and that was one of the best episodes. Honestly, if you go back and listen, you'll love that episode. I mean, anything with Cletho is awesome, but
he's like, our face hurts when we're done with laughing.
He's so funny. And I think that's what made that episode so great, is he made it funny, right? Like, he added that comedian element to it. And he's awesome. You know, I consider myself fortunate to call him a friend now. A few, around the time that I contacted you, around the time he gave you my information, I had gone over to his, he invited me, him and his wife invited me over to his house to kind of show him, you know, the ins and outs of podcasting. And it was so nice. You know, they're just so welcoming. They're such a nice family. They're nice people. And it was so great to do that. So I'm glad we have that mutual friend. He's an awesome person. And I'm so thankful that you put on that fundraiser for him. And I'm sure his family's thankful as well.
Well, yeah. And I asked some friends, I was like, all right, who put together the GoFundMe? And everyone's like, nobody. And I was like, oh, well, then I guess it better be me. It's sort of like, if you look around, you have that idea and nobody's doing it, you better execute it yourself, because you realize you might be the only person that's going to start this. He got a lot of haters too, right? Because he was unvaccinated. People are like, what's wrong with you? All this stuff. And frankly, I had an incident that a lot of people may or may not remember in 2019, when things didn't go so well for me, which garnered me plenty of haters as well. And he stood by my back too. And I never forgot that he didn't judge me for my issues. And so there I was going to stick by him. He had his reasons for not getting the vaccine, which a lot of people do. You know, frankly, a lot of it is fear-based. And so I don't blame them. I did get mine right away, but those that don't, I can't judge them. It's not my job to judge them, you know? And so it was a pleasure to help my friend that all he does is give himself to San Antonio. That's all he does. That's his whole day. Make people laugh and then gives his time.
Well, one of the things I'm curious about, and this is kind of related to what you just brought up and just people, you know, judging you, especially when you have a little bit of a platform and maybe you make a mistake or right, things don't go your way. People are quick to judge, and especially if you are someone who's notable, people know you in the community, people notice you wherever you go. So what is that kind of like? Are you the person, like when you look at the tabloids, right, and you see the celebrities with their hats and sunglasses walking around, like, is that you? Or are you kind of just, you just walk into the HEB, just shopping for your groceries like normal? You know, what is that kind of like?
No makeup, sweatpants, like I'm in HEB, you catch me this way. I intentionally try not to only post gorgeous shots of myself, you know, like where I feel like, man, I look good. I'll post shots where I look completely awkward, right? I'm okay with that. No matter how much you want to have anti-bullying taught in the schools, and I think that's great, and I think that's wonderful, you're going to have an idiot born every day, and you're not going to be able to change them, and so you're going to have to learn to be able to deal with it. To say that it doesn't bother me would be a complaint, but I have control over the length of time that I let it bother me. I'll see it. Ah, it hurts. Now what am I going to do with it? The last thing I did, and I was really excited about this. Some lady called me San Antonio's version, or the answers are San Antonio's version of the Kardashians.
Yeah, I saw that. And
I was like, oh, I've been waiting for this opportunity my whole life. So I love it when something negative is so wonderfully negative that I can turn it into something fantastic. So you may have seen, I don't know if you saw it, but it ended up coming up with shirts that said I roll with the Kardashians, C-A-R, sold the shirts. And then I forget how much I donated or cumulatively was donated. I think it was like 2,500, 3,000 to, suicide prevention, because there's so many kids now that get, hit by cyber keyboard. Or what do they call them? Keyboard cowboys or something like that.
Well, and just, and, you know, trolls behind a keyboard, you know?
Right. Yeah. And they are affected to the lengths of committing suicide. And so I wanted to take it as an example to say, not only was your negativity, it didn't impact me, but I'm going to turn it around, make it something positive and something everybody can laugh at. You know, I get a kick out of it when they're that weird, awful, or whatever. And yes, I can do something with this.
Well, if you ever sell any more of those shirts, I'll definitely be a buyer, because I'll definitely rock one of those shirts.
Thank you.
As we kind of wind down the podcast, April, and this is something I ask to every guest that comes on to Searching for San Antonio. You've been in San Antonio a long time, so I'm sure you have a list of places. But just what are some of your favorite places around San Antonio, whether it's a night out, maybe it's a bar, right? Maybe it's your favorite Mexican restaurant. Maybe it's your breakfast taco spot that you want to hit up every morning. You know, what are some of your favorite San Antonio hangouts here in town?
Super. Okay. So one that goes back to early childhood is Paisanos, but a specific one, because there's several. I really adore Paisanos in the Quarry. That used to be a little bit more downtown when it was originally. And my dad was buddies with the owners at the time back in the day, and they would chat, and that's when he was younger, just getting going in business, and they'd all chat around the table. So I was exposed to Paisanos early on as a kiddo. And to this day, I still enjoy going there to the one in the Quarry. I know my dad's favorite taco place without question is So Luna over there on Broadway. I believe he's at So Luna at least twice a week. They have cheese and, you know, some tacos, some street tacos and whatever. So I had to give a shout out to them. I also really like Mashed as a lunch space in the Rim.
Yeah.
And then downtown, I got married in Hotel Valencia.
Okay.
So I really like going to their bar. I like Dorego's that they have down there. So I'm a huge fan of Hotel Valencia for sure when I go downtown. So those are kind of like my spots, the places that I really.
Well, before I let you go, April, and first off, thank you again for joining me on the podcast. And it's been an excellent interview, just getting to know you a little better. And I'm sure the listeners feel the same way, just kind of getting that other side of you, right? Before I let you go, be sure to plug in. Where can listeners follow you? Where can they find you? Anything like that? Anything you want to plug in, maybe events or fundraisers coming up, anything you want to plug in, this is your floor.
Yeah, sure. So I'm basically on Facebook. I'm April Ann Sierra Thompson. I never really changed my name, but it's a shout out to my husband. because you get goofy people online, right? But I'm really on Twitter. I'm just April Lanciera. On Instagram, I'm April Lanciera. I'm trying on TikTok, but I have no idea what I'm doing. I hate being on this side of things. I remember when I got asked how to use certain platforms when I was younger, and now I'm like, does anyone know how to post this video? So I'm on there. What I do have going on this year is actually I'm back with Leukemia Lymphoma Society. I am applying to them for one of their slots for the World Championship Ironman race. I don't know if you know what an Ironman is, but it's a 140.6 mile race, swim, bike, run. The swim is 2.4, the bike is 112, and the run is a marathon at the end, 26.2, all in one day, back to back. I've done 10 of them. I have an 11th one in April, but you have to qualify like Boston. And in order to qualify, I'd have to shave 3 hours off my time. Ain't nobody got time to shave 3 hours off their time, ironically. So I'm going to try to go the fundraising route. I'm going to apply for that spot with LLS this year. I'm going to have some events, but I can't fundraise yet. So you kind of have to just keep an eye out on all of my social media platforms for when I get started and have some events and start fundraising for LLS. So hopefully I'll be able to do that soon in February. And then I'm off to Kona for the World Championship Ironman.
That's awesome. Well, good luck with that. That's something I definitely, I guess never say never, right? But that's something I can't see myself doing. I could do a 5K, maybe a 10K, right. But I don't know about the Ironman races or marathons.
Can I say one thing? I just want to say one more thing. And you said Eric Cooper. I know I mentioned I felt small, like teeny. And I am doing something that's coming out later this month that is less than teeny. But to those dollars, those $5, those $10, which actually ends up being a bigger percentage of those folks' income than the $1 million donations of those folks. So it's actually more meaningful. What I love about the food bank is $1 feeds 7 people. 7
people
meals.
Fail to realize $1. That. Just $1.
$1.
Yep.
So I just want to mention that when people are thinking, I have nothing to offer, you donate $1 to the food bank, that is 7 people you just fed. And so I just wanted to say that because I want everyone to know, despite what I said earlier, every dollar is important and whatever you do matters. Absolutely matters. So thank you.
Absolutely. Well, thank you again, April. Really enjoyed having you on. Really enjoyed speaking with you. And thank you again for just joining me on the podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks so much.
That's going to do it for my interview with April Lanciera and another episode of Searching for San Antonio. If you want to hear from other amazing people we've interviewed from around the Alamo City, be sure to go through the Searching for San Antonio playlist. You can actually subscribe individually now to Searching for San Antonio if it's the interviews that you enjoy most. If you want to hear Erica and I discuss all the local happenings, be sure to check out our other series, SA Talk. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe to the podcast on your preferred listening platform. Of course, we're available on all podcasting platforms. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, though, I ask that you please leave a rate and review. If you want to keep up with the show and everything we got going on, please give us a follow on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at SA Pod Network. If you have any questions about advertising or partnership opportunities, please reach out to me or Erica. It's just our first names at sapodnetwork.com. That is our email. If you're a listener and want to support the show, you can always visit our link in bio on any social media platform. Click support monthly on our link tree, and it'll allow you to make donations of 99 cents all the way up to $9.99. As always, thanks again for listening, and Viva San Antonio.